Hi, this is John DeLancey, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
There's nothing wrong with your podcast player. Do not attempt to adjust the volume. Hello and welcome back into our studio. You are now inside Studio 2009 here on the GeekCast Radio Network. I'm, of course, TFGO and Mike. And joining me once again, almost as always, is Mr. David Draper. Hello, sir. How are you?
Getting better. I'm doing all right.
That's good. And today we head once again to a galaxy far, far away. That's right. We continue the 12 months of Star Wars Spotlight as we make our way through the Skywalker saga. Today we will be discussing Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back.
The Star Wars saga continues with a special limited engagement of The Empire Strikes Back, starting November 19th.
But first, something that I forgot last time we did this.
Cause I think you forgot it two times, because wasn't that the Rogue One episode?
Yeah.
Well, you're just about as bad as your fans as Jason was with ours.
Stop.
Well, most of the time I'm kidding. No one can be as bad about their fans as Jason was with ours.
Poor Jason.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I love Brad. Brad's awesome. He's a great guy. He gives feedback every once in a while, but sometimes I don't always see it, and I have to catch up with it. And I saw it last time, and then I forgot to do it last time or the last two times or whatever. So, Mr. Brad Mull, thank you for listening, as always. And this was all about our Jurassic Park episode. And he says, okay, so first at the auction concept art for the tree breakout was sold, showing what the layout of the area was. The car was meant to go over a separate part of the fence where the drop off was. It doesn't translate well in the scene.
It does not translate at all. Like,
okay.
There's the way the camera is set up, like you follow the path of the people, you never get a sense that the camera flips around, which, by the way, is like a big no-no in films. You're not supposed to do like a 360 with a camera or something.
Yeah.
But it's all filmed as if you're looking from the – trying to remember my sides. You're looking from the left side for the entire shot.
Mm-hmm.
And you never get the sense that they switch to the right side.
Like
They go through the gap that the T-Rex tore through the fence.
Yep.
Like the T-Rex tear a gap to the other side. In fact, there wasn't a fence on the other side.
Right.
It's just – it's just one of those things they hope nobody would notice.
Yeah.
And 1993, in the middle of that scene,
nobody's
thinking of, like I think it was like the third or fourth time I saw the film that I was like, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
No. Eventually you do go, hey, wait a minute, but they skate on stuff like that. It's fine. It's a movie.
Yep. He also goes on to say Malcolm, as we know, was such a popular character, even though he spent most of the film injured. They obviously made him the lead in The Lost World. Oh, spoilers, Brad. I haven't seen that yet. And he says, and Mike, if you see any of the sequels, watch The Lost World. Spielberg was back after his break and takes it to the next step with a bigger budget and a lot more practical effects. Plus, the Williams score is so much better. The JP score is all over the place and reuses parts from his previous films. Oh, Lord.
Okay, first of all, I don't agree with that part at all. I do agree that the Lost World score is great.
Uh-huh.
I don't think you could. I don't think you have to like play up the Lost World score as being great by denigrating the Jurassic Park score. I think they're both great in their own way.
Okay.
Lost World is a very different film.
Uh-huh.
Spielberg became a different director after Schindler's List.
Right.
1993 was Jurassic Park, which was kind of like the pinnacle of his fandom sci-fi pop artist career.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got his Academy Award for Schindler's List. And I can't remember the guy's I looked this up, too, a long time ago when we were going to talk about this. But he got a new cinematographer. I'm going to butcher the name. Janusz Kaczynski?
Okay.
Apologize. For Schindler's List. And mm-hmm. I think he's worked with that guy for most of the films he's done since. Okay. I looked through his filmography, and he was – but anyway, like, the next one he did was Lost World, which is a much darker film. And it's a different film. It's not a fun theme park ride where it's like scary. It's a dark, like, remember how like they got rid of everybody on the island? They all got on the boat and left.
Yep.
Yeah. In Lost World, I'll just say that they don't get off the boat. There are plenty of people to get munched and stomped and eaten, and which is kind of how I prefer these films. Like I like it when there's not like five people, because you know they're not all gonna die. You'll lose one guy. If there's like 20 guys, oh yeah, there's going to be munching, death, and chaos. Malcolm in the book dies.
Okay.
He dies in the first book. And when they came back to the second book, for whatever reason, Crichton decided to bring him back. So like one of the first things that Malcolm says is reports of my death are greatly exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
He literally has a vision when he dies of, you know, because the raptors are actually getting into the bunker. They're eating through the bars.
Okay.
The raptors are like, even though the raptors are bigger and meaner in the movie, they're a real horrible threat in the book. They're like unstoppable.
Yeah.
And they're breeding like crazy. But yeah, they bring back Malcolm as the main character in the second book. He's very different in the movie. I can't remember how, because I've only read the book once. But he's kind of a different character in the movie. He's in the second movie in Lost World. He's much more the hero rather than the guy who goes around going, oh, it's not going to work. Oh, he still goes around and says it's not going to work all the time.
Yeah, he's probably still, again, and I haven't seen that, and we're going to get to that in a minute.
I know, it's not a spoiler, really. I mean, you know,
I'm joking. Hello.
He's not quite the rock star who's laughing at everything.
That's
in the book, it's more like he's been through this traumatic experience and he's evolved.
Right.
Which is, that's one of those things you've got to kind of bring yourself to the movie.
Yeah,
is he's a little bit different?
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, and then the other thing about the movie, kind of not famously, but among fans, is that the real villain of the movie is Vince Vaughn.
Okay.
And I won't spoil it, but like he's on the good guy side. He's on the gatherer side.
Well, between now and September, even if I do get spoiled on it, spoilers generally don't. Yeah, I'm not gonna fucking remember. But are you kidding me?
The movie was set up as hunters and gatherers.
Right.
Good guys, gotcha. Gatherers.
Okay.
Vaughn's on the gatherer side, and Vaughn is kind of responsible for killing everybody.
Oh, of course. Brad goes on to say, as we kind of already know this, Jurassic Park isn't a complete story. The helicopter flies off at the end, and now we have dinosaurs on the world and the island. Still, there is still an
engine. In the book, the Costa Rican government bombs the crap out of the island. Okay. And they leave that out of the movie. They bomb the crap out of the island, and then they like hold everybody kind of not really a hostage, but like they're not really arrested, but they're not allowed to go home. Like the end of the book is a guy comes up and says, well, we'll probably let the kids go home. And Alan's like, well, what about us? And it's like, maybe. And some of the dinosaurs get off the island.
Right. Yeah. And the last thing Brad says, and he says, yeah, even now, everyone going to the boat makes no sense. I can only imagine they wanted to show the island. The automation running with a few people there, but the park's not open and the computers aren't ready.
And again, that's not in the book. Like in the book, part of the idea is that they start to get everything back in control again. But of course, Malcolm's like, well, that's just an illusion. You're not really getting everything back into control. You just think you are.
Yeah.
And the raptors show up and prove that no, because the whole real point of the book is that the raptors are sneaking off and breeding.
Right.
Like wild monkeys. And then there's that one shot of the eggs in the movie that doesn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. But the weird thing is, because he blows up the island in the book, when he does the sequel book, which is the only time I think Crichton's done a sequel, Lost World is kind of unique because it's the only time Crichton's done a sequel. And aside from the Indiana Jones films, which are like a James Bond series, it's the only time Spielberg's really done a sequel. Quote unquote.
Yeah.
But because he blew up the island, he had to have that's why there's a different island. Because they adapted the book, kind of. That's why there's a different island in the movie.
Yeah.
And but it also kind of set up for Jurassic World to come back and go, well, they didn't blow up the island in the book in the movie, so we can bring back the T-Rex from the, you know, the Rex in Jurassic World is the same Rex.
Mm-hmm. Briefly, before we get to our back into the galaxy folks here, I'm going to say Janusz Kaminski is the dude's name. He's Polish. Yeah. It's spelled J-A-N-U-S-Z. So Janusz, whatever.
Okay. Well,
but I'm looking at this dude's filmography as a cinematographer, director of photography. Oh my god! Yeah. Like starting with pretty much starting with The Adventures of Huck Finn in '93, Schindler's List, Little Giants, Tall Tale, How to Make an American Quilt, Jerry Maguire. Wow, obviously Lost World. Almost basically 9 of Spielberg's films from 97 to 2005. So you got Lost World, Amistad, Saving Private Ryan, AI, Minority Report, Catch Me If You Can, which I would love to do in it. I love that movie.
I did, you know, I saw it once in the theaters, and I remember I really loved it. And I love Williams' score is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's an underrated gem.
Yeah, that is absolutely. The Terminal, War of the Worlds, and Munich. And then he did Funny People with Judd Apatow. He did more Spielberg movies, Adventures of Tintin, War Horse, and Lincoln.
That's another one that's underrated is Adventures of Tintin. I know that everybody is like, oh, it's got the Uncanny Valley and the dead eyes. But it's when it starts cooking, mm-hmm. you get that real kind of tingly sense of vintage Spielberg.
Okay, I know this was a book, and I don't know how, whatever, but he did the cinematography on Ready Player One, which is, how is Ready Player One a Spielberg movie? Oh my god.
It's a Spielberg movie.
I know.
And then of course, they deliberately cut almost all the Spielberg references because Spielberg directed, and I think most of the Star Wars references.
Wow.
The only real Spielberg references are the DeLorean and the T-Rex.
Mm. And currently,
you missed like two-thirds. Like the whole point of that stupid book is references.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people love it, and I liked it okay when I read it. The movie was kind of underwhelming, mm-hmm. but it's just pop culture reference the book.
Yeah, absolutely. So currently, he is in post-production on If, directed by John Krasinski. Okay. If is that new, it's a story you have to believe. It's the new, it's the imaginary friend story.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that the one with Ryan Reynolds?
Yes. If is an upcoming American live-action animated fantasy comedy film written, directed, and produced by John Krasinski, starring an ensemble cast that includes Ryan Reynolds, blah, 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 blah. Scheduled to be released in the United States by Paramount Pictures on May. Wow, that's...
Oh, yeah, they played the trailer.
Yeah, no, I remember. They did the Super Bowl thing. Yeah, so that's all that. So getting back into the galaxy. The Empire Strikes Back. Directed by Ivan Kershner. Story by George Lucas. Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Billy. The only cast member I think we really need to focus on here is Billy. Because he's kind of the only, new headlining cast member. Everybody else, we've talked about Hamill. I called him Solo. Holy crap. We've talked about Harrison. We've talked about Carrie. We've talked about everybody else.
I think there are, this is the movie where Han Solo really becomes Han Solo.
Mm-hmm.
He's at his most Han Solo-ish.
Yep.
Because in the first film, he's kind of cool. In this one, it's kind of the classic Harrison Ford character, yep. where he's kind of he projects being a badass, but he's also kind of like fumbling all the time. You know, there's that like Indiana Jones is like a badass, but then he gets his butt beat all the time. You know,
yep.
there's always this sense of a Harrison Ford character seems really cool, but he's also you get those moments where he's paddling as fast as he can, he's faking it.
Yeah,
you get the most and Leia I think changes as a character, and I think you can kind of trace George Lucas's crumbling marriage with the Star Wars films.
Yes.
Where in the first film, she's sassy and she's got an acid tongue, but she's strong and independent and smart. And this one, she's just a nag and a mm-hmm. bring down and a pain in the ass. And she doesn't come off as strong. She comes off as not a whiner, but like a complainer. And then in the third one, of course, she gets put in the, she becomes a slave girl and gets put in the bikini. and you know, by that one, they had divorced.
Right. Yes.
So I think that's an it's interesting that Leia is such an iconic feminist icon, which is a redundant sentence, but you know, but she's so iconic as a feminist symbol, and yet it's really only the first film that she comes off well. And I'm not saying that that's anything wrong with Carrie Fisher or the character. I think that she got undermined.
Yeah.
By Lucas. Because his wife cheated on him and they got divorced. Luke, of course, the big thing about Luke is Mark Hamill got in a terrible car crash between the two films.
Right.
And so they added that thing at the beginning where the Wampa like smacks the crap out of him to explain any changes in his face.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Also, Yoda's in it. Yoda's new.
Okay.
Yoda's a bigger character than Lando. Lando's kind of like, okay. I mean, he's cool and all, but Yoda's like
Yoda,
the big.
Yoda is a puppet. Yoda is, no, it's Frank Oz, but he's a puppet. Like,
oh, come on, Yoda has more character than like half the characters who appear in movies these days.
All right.
Yoda has the best lines. Yoda is what makes this movie the one that everyone remembers. It's what elevates the Force from being this vague idea to being something mystical and magical.
Gotcha.
And it's part of the reason Yoda is what like makes what Lucas did with the prequel trilogy screws it up.
Yeah.
There's Yoda's line about luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. That's deep.
Yeah.
Like he makes the Force out to be this, like, it's just, he makes the movie, man.
I don't disagree with you. What I meant more so was that Billy Dee will, out of the human actors that we actually, yes, I agree with you. I would not, yes, and we will talk about Frank Oz, absolutely. I wasn't not going to talk about
Frank Oz is human, you know.
Yeah, he is, but you don't see, you see Billy Dee Williams' human face on the screen. You see a green puppet with big ears.
I see how it is.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying we're not going to talk about him. I'm just saying.
I want to make a joke, but like it comes off like the word is too close to fascist, so it doesn't work right. Like you're fascist.
Uh-huh.
You're fascist. Yeah. So, okay.
Right. Really not, but you know. Yes, Frank Oz, master, just absolute master, debuted the Muppet movie in 79. Fozzie, Miss Piggy, Sam Eagle, Animal, Marvin Suggs, and additional characters. Well, you could just start and stop right there.
I mean, you really could. I think he did all my favorite characters from the Muppets are by Frank Oz, I think.
Probably.
I can't remember who does Beaker. I think Oz does Beaker, or
It Henson says additional characters, but it doesn't say he may do him later. I'm looking through. I do not see Beaker listed here so far.
I love Animal and I love Fozzie.
Yeah, I agree. Waka waka, but yeah, his career is basically Star Wars and the Muppets.
He also directed Dirty Rotten Scandals, and he directed, I think, three Men and a Baby. He directed a lot of movies.
Director, okay. Debut was 1982, The Dark Crystal, Muppets Take Manhattan, Little Shop of Horrors. You're right, Dirty Rotten Scoundrel in 88. I need to rewatch that. I don't remember. Oh, wow. He directed What About Bob? Holy crap. House Sitter, Indian in the... Oh, man. Talk about a movie that did not translate well into a movie from the book. Oh, God.
All right, Richard Hunt did Beaker.
Okay, Richard. Okay. There you go.
I never knew that. I did not know that.
I did not know Frank directed the score from 2001, which is the Edward Norton, Robert De Niro, Angela Bassett, Marlon Brando was in it. Only time that Brando and De Niro appeared on screen together. Apparently,
Brando was a dick to Frank Oz.
Probably. Brando was a dick to everybody, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he was like a super dick. He was like, because Oz was a puppeteer, he treated him like garbage.
Yeah. I need to track that down. Muppet Guys Talking, Secrets Behind the Show, The Whole World Watched. as a documentary that he did in 2017. I need to track that.
I'm sure Jason has multiple copies.
I'm sure he does, too. Jason has everything. Well, he used to have everything. I don't know if he's sold it all by now.
Well, he's either got it on, like, a computer or he's...
Right, yeah.
He's not as... He's like John Wick. He's not as out as he pretends to be. He's still in. He's still... They put up certain Transformers and I hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else on Mr. Oz that we want to talk about? Anything else you want to bring up?
Not right now, I suppose.
All right.
We haven't even really talked about the story yet. We're sort of
not yet. We're just going through. Like I said, I wanted to hit him and hit. Not I want to hit him, but talk about him and talk about Billy D. Because Billy D. Man, oh man. So besides this, look through here. So besides The Empire Strikes Back. His debut as an actor was in 1959, The Last Angry Man, which I don't think I've ever seen that. Way before either one of our times.
I mean, I think the big thing he was known for before Empire was, oh God, I can't remember the name of it now, Brian's Song? It's about a Chicago Bears football player who dies of cancer, and he plays Gale Sayers.
Brian's Song had to be after? I do not see that.
I think it was before.
Bingo, Mahogany.
I'm getting the name wrong. Yeah, Mahogany was a big one too.
He played Brian Walker in Mahogany. Bingo Long.
Oh my God, your dad would know.
I don't know if
it's our generation's dad movie.
Let me look up Brian's Song and I will edit this out. Brian's Song was
1971 sport drama.
Yeah. Oh wow.
Ryan Piccolo and Gale Sayers, Billy Dee Williams, are teammates on the 1960s Chicago Bears.
Then the Billy Dee Williams filmography on Wikipedia needs to be updated because it skips from 70 to 72.
That's why you do IMDb, because they're professionals.
Funny.
And then I think Piccolo gets sick and dies, and it's one of those things. It's the guy film where they all cry. Like it's like
okay.
Because he dies because he's a football player and he dies. It's really touching and emotional. And
I always thought Brian's Song was later, but okay.
Well, it's not. It was the year I was born.
Yes, sir.
Which means it's pretty freaking old and has a bad back.
Pretty freaking old. That's about right. Of course, Billy Dee would go on to reprise Lando in multiple roles, not just in Return of the Jedi, but we can just include all of the voice roles that he's voiced the character because he's done it in multiple Lego things over the years. And
well, yeah, the best one was the original Lego movie where the Millennium Falcon shows up and it's Billy Dee Williams.
Yeah.
And they steal the hyperdrive. The Lego characters steal its hyperdrive.
That's funny.
And then he was Harvey Dent in the Batman film.
He was Harvey Dent. That's what I was going to say.
He got robbed of being in the sequels, and then they put him in the Lego Batman movie as Harvey Dent.
As Harvey Two-Face, yeah. That's awesome. That's great. For me, and this is just, I don't know what this says about me, folks, but his television credits, that's why it was a TV movie. That's why. No,
oh, was it?
Yes, it was. I remember reruns of Brian's Song in the 90s as a teenager, and it wasn't a theatrical film. It was a television movie. Oh, No. I just wanted to make sure. I'm like, holy crap, why doesn't Wikipedia have this under his films if it's a film? And then I realized, oh, right, it's in the TV section. Anyway. I remember seeing him on Sesame Street. And then after that, we all grew up with our parents and grandparents watching soap operas, right?
Sure, why not?
General Hospital, All My Children, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah,
I didn't really know my grandparents, but okay, sure.
Okay, but I'm just saying, like, we're from the generation where
I'm from the generation where soap operas existed. I'm aware of them. I used to watch when I was, like, a young teen, like, early. When I was younger, I watched a little bit of All My Children.
Yeah. So, point is, in 2007, General Hospital did a spin-off night series because they wanted to do whatever and have something at night. And they called it General Hospital Night Shift. And he shows up as Toussaint Dubois. And I was like, I remember where I was in 2007 when I saw it. I'm like, what is Lando Calrissian doing on General Hospital? Was the line that I said to the friend that was with me watching this thing. And then after that, like you mentioned, all the Lego stuff.
Hey, General Hospital is where we got Zack Adama from, so don't.
There you go. No, I'm not talking smack about it. I'm just like, it was one of those things where I was not expecting Lando to show up on a soap. And he, soap, and yes. I was excited. I was like, ooh, I haven't seen him since Return of the Jedi at the time. And then in 2011, this episode, there was a series on USA Network called White Collar. It was with Tim DeKay and Matt Bomer. It was about con and cop and did white collar crime and FBI, whatever else. And he shows up as this character named Ford, who comes back because he was friends with Neil Caffrey's landlady. He was friends with her husband. And again, it was one of those things where it's Billy D. What's he do? Oh yeah. I always love watching when he comes back to see stuff and do stuff. So that's my whole point in any of this.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of those, like, he's so likable that you just, yeah. And of course, we will get yelled at in the comments if we don't mention that he's also famous for the Colt 45 commercials.
Yes. Yes, he is. Absolutely. And we're probably going to have to do some of the Lego Star Wars stuff, folks, at some point. So,
okay.
Just some of it. Not all of it, but some of it. Like, I didn't realize in 2022 they did Lego Star Wars Summer Vacation.
Okay.
All right, to the movie, finally. Sorry, folks. It is what it is.
Look, it's the movie is like 40 plus years old. Like, if you don't know what it's about, like, I mean, we're talking around the movie. We're talking about the movie. It's a vast goulash of pop culture stuff that revolves around this film.
Yep. And I've seen three of Ivan Kershner's films. This one, the Bond film he did.
Which one was that? Was that Never Say Never Again?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then RoboCop 2.
He did RoboCop 2?
What it says here, 1990 American.
Yeah. Boy, that's kind of a shame.
It was the last thing he did, apparently.
Yeah. Well, let me put it this way. He was friends with George Lucas.
Yeah, he wasn't friends with George Lucas.
But yeah, he's the reason when they were doing the prequels, they asked Spielberg, would you like to make a Star Wars movie? Mm-hmm. And Spielberg famously said, I would love to, but I'd rather stay friends with George. Because they, like, Kershner and Lucas, like, Lucas was really angry about what Kershner did with Empire.
Okay.
Which, of course, was to make the best one. Like, he hates, like, the famous moment is they were when Han goes into Carbonite.
Yep.
They had gone out drinking the night before, he and Fisher, and they were like hung over as hell. And the script reads is she goes, I love you, and he goes, I love you too. And Ford was like, yeah, there's no way Han Solo would say I love you too. He just wouldn't. And they tried take after take after take of various lines, various readings. And it was that classic kind of Ford thing where it's like, yeah, whatever. I know. Mm-hmm. And it works. It's such a perfect Han Solo line.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were doing the preview for it, people laughed. And Lucas was furious. He's like, they're laughing. You're ruining my movie. He didn't understand that. Yeah, they were laughing, but they also, you know, it's a tension breaking thing in this really hard scene. And then, you know, it's just, George is a good idea guy.
Yeah.
He's famously not good with people.
Yeah.
And Yeah, and he and Kirsch, apparently their friendship was very damaged by that, and that's why he kind of hired a that's why Richard Marquand was kind of a hired gun for Jedi.
Mm.
And Lucas had a lot more. Well, and also like a lot of it was also Lucas had a heart attack, and he kind of had to turn over production of the movie to somebody else. And I don't think that he's kind of a control freak. He's
right.
You know, the irony is about George Lucas's life is he wants to be he sees himself as Luke Skywalker, but he's really more Darth Vader. Not in an evil blowing up planets kind of way, but he's a businessman like his dad. He never wanted to be like his dad, but that's his real talent, his business and that kind of thing, and machines. Gotcha. He's more Vader than or more Anakin than Luke.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So yeah, folks, you all know, but and I this is what is interesting to me, because it I don't think it says it in the crawl, but this film is 3 years after the destruction of the Death Star.
According,
you know, that's whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure there. Yeah, I don't know how long it is after the destruction of the Death Star. I mean,
yeah.
The movie literally was 3 years after Star Wars.
Right, exactly. Sure
there are timelines.
Yeah.
That people have. To me, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no.
Irrelevant. No, I know, but I'm not yelling at you. I'm just saying that it's like, you know, it takes place after the first film. It could be 6 months. It could be 3 years. I don't know that there's anything about the time period that really matters, if that makes sense.
Well, the only reason why I'm bringing it up and the only reason why I kind of think it sort of matters is that as they're setting up Echo Base, Han said, you know, that he's talking about leaving, whatever else.
Yeah, he's had adventures, yeah.
Right, he's had adventures. He's done. So there have been things that have happened between getting the medals, worst ending ever, and
I still have no sympathy for you. Oh, they left it open ended. It's like, oh, and then you got to go watch the next videotape. I waited three freaking years.
See, the time matters, doesn't it?
In real life, yes.
But my point is that I like the idea of, yes, we already had the beginning of the story. However, in between the story, there's just like how exactly. They're doing.
Yeah, like life.
Yeah.
Like they ran into that bounty hunter on Ord Mantell.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely love that. So yeah, the Empire is striking out, folks. They're striking out on their own, and they're trying to find the rebels, and they're throwing probe droids all over the universe and the galaxy. And
well, Vader's obsessed because he now knows in the comics there's a whole story arc about Vader finding out who Luke Skywalker is.
Right.
And obviously he's obsessed with finding Luke Skywalker because, you know, he figured out that this is his kid.
Yep.
He wants to find him. But he's obsessed with that.
Yep. How many Wampa action figures do you have?
You know, honestly, I'm not sure. Several.
Okay.
I know that. Like, I loved the Wampa as a kid.
Okay.
I've got a vintage one in the box. I've got two or three. I've got like every modern one they did for the orange line. I may have the Black Series Wampa. I don't think I do. Okay. I've got the Mighty Mugs, I think is what it was called. They're
from
sort
back
of
in the day, yeah.
Pop vinyl ripoff. Yep. I've got the stuffed 12-inch one that they did a billion years ago. I like the Wampa is one of my favorite. The Tauntauns. I love the Tauntauns.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I was obsessed with them.
Yeah. I like the Tauntauns too. The reason why I'm asking you about the Wampa specifically is because Funko, they've done a pop of it. I don't know if it's whatever. Anyway, but when they launched Funko Sodas back in 2020, they did these 3-liter larger figures. They have a Wampa where the regular one is just the Wampa with both arms. The Chase is him without his arm.
Yeah. Well, there's, I mean, some of the, several of the more modern figures have a removable arm.
Right.
There was a deluxe version that came out years and years ago that actually comes with like a little stand so you can plug Luke like upside down.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, I've got that in the setup. I know there's a stuffed one. I think the one you can get at Disney World, the stuffed one, has like a little, Velcro thing that attaches the arm. And the Wampa is an interesting like point to get to because I watched, because we talked about this the first time, I watched what was kind of called the Super Special Edition,
okay,
which came out after the prequels. And you can tell because they redubbed Boba Fett with Tamara Morrison. But it was technically part of one of the special editions. And Empire doesn't have a lot of tinkering like some of the other films, but it does have, there are extra shots of the Wampa, which is one of the first major changes from for the special edition. So just it's one of the special edition things is there are extra shots of the Wampa.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Which is cool because I also watched this on Disney Plus. I assume that's the.
Did Boba Fett sound like Tamara Morrison?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, that was probably
because Ian was the Emperor, which originally he wasn't in this.
Yeah, but I think for the original, like this is one of those things I'm not sure about because I mean, you know, because they keep tinkering with it, I'm starting to Mandela effect things. I know they redid the Emperor stuff in the special edition.
Yeah,
but the Emperor really looked like his Episode 3 look, and I wonder if they went back and re-redid it. All I know is poor Clive Rebel got screwed because he was the original voice. He was in my favorite episode of Columbo, and he was the original voice of the Emperor. And then there was an old woman and monkey eyes.
Yep,
because they didn't really know what they were doing.
Yeah,
and the dialogue's different in that scene too.
Right. Yeah, so since their initial release, the special editions have been altered multiple times. For the 2004 re-release, the Clive Revel, Elaine Barker Emperor was replaced by Ian, who had performed the role.
Oh, that was the super special editions?
I guess so. Oh. That's, I don't know. It doesn't say super special. It says
the special editions were 97.
Okay, yeah.
And if it was 2004, which is which is definitely post prequels.
Yeah. Well, it's in between 2 and 3.
But they knew who Boba Fett's voice was.
Right. Yeah.
Although you can actually see Jeremy Bullock in the film, who's the guy in the suit. He's the Imperial officer who's dragging Leia away when she's like, Luke, it's a trap.
Okay, gotcha.
That's Jeremy Bullock.
Nice, very cool.
AKA Boba Fett.
There you go. What's interesting to me about Clive Revel being replaced is Clive Revel was the original voice of Alfred in Batman the Animated Series. He did the promo or he did something and then they switched it from him to who it really was throughout the entire DC Animated Universe, which is Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
Yeah, which I can't imagine Alfred with a different voice.
No.
Ephraim's like everything voice, else with Batman the Animated Series, everything but Penguin and Catwoman, Batman the Animated Series does it perfectly.
Yep.
Those are the only two characters I kind of dropped the ball on. Like, you know, it's like hearing that Tim Curry was the original Joker. Like, you can't imagine it.
Yeah.
Not being Mark Hamill.
Exactly. Absolutely. So, Empire Strikes Back. I have not seen this film since 2010. And watching it again, watching whatever edition this is. Like you've already said, this is the movie.
Yeah, and it's also like I said, it's also one they screwed up the least by tinkering with it.
Right.
Because I think most of the stuff like adding Ian McDiarmid as the Emperor, I don't really think we lose anything by like improving the Emperor or cleaning up stuff. The extra shots of the Wampa don't really hurt. You know, there's only one change that they did to the movie that I thought screwed it up. And it made me angrier than Han or Greedo shooting first.
Okay.
And they change it for the 2004 edition. They changed it back. They changed back. Which is when Luke is hanging on the gantry, and you know, after I am your father,
right?
And he lets go.
Mm-hmm.
They added the Emperor's scream when Vader throws him down the shaft.
Okay.
Added that, and that made me so angry because the way it plays is Luke sacrifices himself. He makes this noble choice to sacrifice himself.
Yep.
And face death, and then all of a sudden he's screaming like a little bitch, and you're like, "This is bullshit."
Yeah.
And they took that out. They took that out for the 2004 edition, which, like, I'm very glad they did, because that's the one thing that just, like, ruins that whole sequence.
Then the one on Disney Plus must be the 2004 edition, because I heard nothing but silence in
that. Yeah, no, he screams like a little – and it's the exact same scream that the Emperor does.
Mm-hmm.
They reuse that sound effect, probably because it's poetry. It rhymes.
Mm. Yeah.
and then the other major change is – and I remember when Lucas went on Stephen Colbert's show, they actually made fun of it because Colbert had this little running like bit where there was like this animated show about him as a space hero. I think Tank Jansen maybe.
Okay.
But when Lucas came on the show, the episode was basically just the entire Tech Jansen episode was a spaceship landing for like 5 minutes. Because Lucas is obsessed with like showing spaceships landing. And the other major addition to the special edition, and maybe they even pumped it up, is when he's on Bespin and he's like, I prepare my shuttle. I'm going back to my ship.
Right.
And they show him walking to his shuttle on Bespin. And then they show the shuttle leaving Bespin. And then they show the shuttle like kind of a reuse of Return of the Jedi where it lands in the executor. None of that is in the original film. Vader goes, prepare my shuttle. And then the next time you see him, he's on the bridge of the executor. And I guess Lucas is like, I don't understand. How did he get there? Did he teleport? We didn't see him board the shuttle. We didn't see the shuttle flying. We didn't see the shuttle landing. People will be confused. Like, right. Nobody was confused, George. And it doesn't really hurt the film, but it's just like, we didn't need any of this. Like, we get it. Yeah. He took the shuttle and I mean, I love the Lambda. I love that shuttle. I love that design. Yeah. It's nice to see it, 3 years earlier than when it first showed up in Return of the Jedi. But, like, did we need it?
Nah.
No. And did we need all those shots? Like, okay, this shuttle is flying off of Bespin. Is that Vader's shuttle? I don't know. Like, did he make it to the executor? Like, I need that shot of it landing. I need that shot of him walking to it. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Okay. It's crazy. I love the fast action pace for like the first, 20, 30 minutes of this film.
Yeah.
I love that. I think that's great. Hoth is my favorite planet out of them all, I think, just because.
I would be inclined to agree.
Except.
No. I'm trying to think how I feel about Endor. Like, the Hoth sequence is probably my favorite sequence from Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Like from beginning to end.
I
love the outfits. I love the entire like battle. Like that battle, out of everything out of Star Wars when I was a kid. That battle was the one that we reenacted over and over again.
Yep.
Out of everything.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I like Endor for its scenery.
Yeah, I like Endor, but just like Hoth thing really just clicked with me.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I love the Tauntauns. I mean, they kind of look like dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
I love the AT-ATs. I love that whole battle where the dudes have rifles against AT-ATs.
Mm-hmm.
Snowspeeders are kind of cool, but like there's a line that I always love. They're snowspeeders, but they're having trouble adapting into the cold. they're probably not very good snowspeeders then.
No, they're not.
Well, they're technically they're air speeders. We call them snowspeeders, but they're air speeders.
That's why they're having trouble adapting.
It's a movie and it's merchandising and but what I mean is like when they merchandise them as snowspeeders. They never call them snowspeeders in the film.
Right.
In fact, they only mention T-47s once, and you don't even know if that's what – like, in the movie, it's not even clear that's what they're talking about.
Yep.
So, like – but, yeah, it's funny to me that snowspeeders had to be adapted to the cold. And then there was another thing that really, like, I find amusing. I can't remember what it was now. I distracted myself.
So many quotes in this film. Like, this film has all the quotes. Like,
and it has cursing, too.
Yes, it does.
I'll see you in hell.
I'll see you in hell. That's right. I got really excited and this is so stupid and so Rogue Two. I'm like, yeah, that's the call sign. There you go.
Yeah, it's the first time you see Rogue Squadron.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, if you watch them in order now, it's not. But like,
it's cool
that it's that's why they did Rogue Squadron. That's why Rogue Squadron is Rogue Squadron.
Yeah.
Is because they retroactively went back and explained the creation of Rogue Squadron.
Yeah.
But if you're watching in order, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the fast pace. I love when it slows down too. But I love the fact that battle, man, up until the point where they basically pull out the tow cable and trip the AT-AT, was like, holy crap! There's so much going on here outside the base, inside the base, and I think we're in trouble.
I love that for some reason. The impenetrable armor of the AT-AT becomes penetrable when it's just like lying down. Like nothing else changed except it's lying on its face and they're able to blow it up.
Yep. I don't know. I think we're in trouble. We're in trouble. Oh man. Just love it. Absolutely love it.
Now, you can find it on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
There was a subplot about Wampas attacking the base.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like when Han is looking for Luke and he wanders in and you see all these Tauntauns and like 2-1B is working on a Tauntaun and there's like blood on the walls.
Right.
They've been attacked by Wampas.
Oh.
And they end up corralling the Wampas. They use like a sonic something or whatever, but they corral them into this room and lock the door. And when they're running for the Falcon, you can see them run past a door that's got like a yellow sign on it. If you're, you can still see it in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's like a warning sign. Don't go in here.
Yeah.
And you can find this clip on YouTube. As 3PO runs past, he stops, he turns around, and he pulls the sign off. And then he keeps running. So when the snowtroopers come running in, they open the door.
Right.
And you see like big furry Wampa. I think part of it was that the Wampa didn't work or didn't look right. Right. They open the door and they get attacked by Wampas.
Oh, that would have been so cool. But it's fine that it's not there, too.
Yeah, it's fine it's not there, but it's just a neat little thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, we have the asteroid field, and you never tell how to solo the odds, folks.
3,720-1.
That's right.
That is, again, like, as much as I love the Hoth sequence, the asteroid field is the sequence. It is Han Solo. It is the Falcon.
Yep.
It is the like the music is like whenever I go into to this day, whenever I go into a store and it's crowded full of people, like that music plays in my head as I'm trying to get around and dodge and move. It is perfect. It's beautiful. Like that is my favorite sequence in all of Star Wars.
Yes, absolutely. And the one thing I liked about this, and I know we're not to Cloud City just yet, but the one thing I like Lando and the Falcon just a little bit more in this. Like, Han's great, don't get me wrong. I love Han, and it's his ship and whatever else, but because of, again, like you said, with watching in story order and what, I love seeing Lando in the Falcon. That's cool as hell. Cranky-ass old Jedi Master you seek. There we go. So, we get Yoda, and Yoda is awesome, and it's interesting watching this film now with everything I've seen since seeing it initially when I was a kid, because we've had so many other Yoda things since then, which is the prequels and all the animation stuff that we've had with Rebels and Clone Wars and everything else. Yoda was literally cranky ass old man. Like, get off my lawn.
Not at first. At first, he's the wacky, goofy creature who's a big pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Because he's playing Luke. And I will say, Yoda is probably the only piece of the puzzle. Yoda and R2 are the only piece of the puzzle from the prequels that don't fit.
Because
like everyone's like, why doesn't C-3PO recognize Darth Vader? And it's like, when are they ever in a scene together? Why doesn't R2 recognize Darth Vader? Why aren't they in a scene together? But Yoda and R2, I think, have kind of crossed paths, especially with Clone Wars. I'm pretty sure they've crossed paths.
Yeah.
So that one, because one of the big complaints is, how come Obi-Wan didn't mention every single other Jedi that he trained with? He says Yoda is the one that trained him, but he trained with Qui-Gon. How come he didn't mention, like, Luke is freezing his ass to death.
Yeah.
Is Obi-Wan going to go, you know, go to Yoda, the Jedi who trained me after that, you know, before Qui-Gon, my other master, and Steve, my, who, you know, like, oh, I had many masters, amongst my many masters, it's like, dude, Yoda's the only one who's relevant to this situation.
Yes.
Like, calm down. People are always like, well, how come he didn't mention Qui-Gon? It's like, because it wasn't relevant.
Because Qui-Gon wasn't a thing yet. I mean, it might have been.
Okay, Qui-Gon wasn't a thing yet, but B, it's not relevant to the scene.
Yeah, no, not at all. Like, the whole point, because from the first, I'm going to say from the first, but from A New Hope to now in Empire, Luke is learning about the Force, and the Force, and the Jedi, and the this, and the Jedi are all but extinct. Like, you know, they are. Well, reason to mention.
Yeah, well, I mean, also, is situational specific. Like, Obi-Wan's trying to get information in this guy's thick skull before he dies.
Yep.
And it's like, why is he going to go off on a tangent about somebody else that, like, isn't relevant? Like, Yoda's the one who's... go seek Yoda, the one who's still alive, who taught me. I mean, geez. Yeah,
that's
like
that's
fans the point. Pick everything. Yeah. I do think, I do think the Yoda R2 connection is a little. You got to kind of squint.
Yeah,
because in Star Wars, when Obi-Wan says, "I can't remember owning a droid," he does, like, he delivers everything with a little bit of a, because it's Alec Guinness and he's great. You almost, if you're looking for it, he almost seems a little fishy about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like almost all that stuff he tells Luke, he's always got a, like a little bit of like, you can see him being fishy and not wanting to tell the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I don't know that Obi-Wan actually did own a droid. I think they were all like Jedi. Like, technically, he might not have owned a droid.
Yeah.
So it was probably true from a certain point of view.
Yep.
And he never owned R2. Like, that was Anakin's droid.
Yep. Absolutely.
Technically, it was Padme's droid, but, you know.
Yeah. But, yeah. And the thing is, like, C-3PO and R2 were, and I mean, 3PO himself says it with everything he says in A New Hope, with everything we've seen, blah, 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 blah.
Well, yeah, like, he got memory wiped anyway, which is a cheap joke, and it's not. Yeah. But there's another thing. It's I remember reading this, so, you know, take that for what it's worth. But I think in the original script for Empire, like after 3PO gets blown up in Cloud City.
Yep.
There's a scene in the script where Vader pulls out his heart, 3PO's heart, and crushes it.
Oh.
You're kind of like, ooh, I wish they'd kept that. If it's true, I wish they'd kept that. Because in retrospect, that would have been, like, amazing.
Yeah.
No, because
I built you. I'm going to destroy you.
Now I'm going to destroy you.
Yep. Yep. Of course, one of the best lines. I mean, they're all really good lines in here, but adventure, excitement, a Jedi craves not these things.
Yes.
Leia gets to say the line in this. I've got a bad feeling about this.
I caught that, yeah.
And the funniest thing for me, and we've already established, folks, that Dave is the ancient one among the two of us. So this was way past his prime, but Stephanie Tanner, eat your heart out. C-3PO said it first. How rude.
Oh, yeah.
I love that when Luke and R2 get to Cloud City, that his first instinct is to pull out his blaster, not the lightsaber.
That's an interesting point. Yeah.
When he's sneaking around, it's right before she says.
No. I know what you're saying. Yeah.
I found that really interesting that his first instinct is to pull out his blaster, not use the more elegant Jedi weapon.
Well, you know, you can argue that's thematic because he's not right. He's not thinking like a Jedi.
Nope.
Absolutely. It's interesting. It's interesting to contrast this movie with a line from Man of Steel, where like in Man of Steel, it's like, you know, there's this moment where Kevin Costner's dad's like, or Superman's dad, Kevin Costner, is kind of like, well, you just let him die, you know, let me die, and it's very callous. Where Yoda says, you know, he's like, Luke's like, am I going to let my friends die? And Yoda says, if you value what they fight for, yes.
Yeah.
And it puts it in a lot better perspective. It's like, look, you'll screw everything up and you'll give the bad guys what they want.
Yep.
Or you can, you know, your friends are suffering to protect you.
Yeah.
And you can honor that. And of course, Luke's. I never liked Luke. I will be ever. I've never liked Luke. He's an idiot throughout the entire. Well, he's a little better in Return of the Jedi, but he's a dumbass in the first two films. And he's always screwing up. If you notice, both times he confronts Vader in the cave and on Bespin, he's the guy who lights his sword first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Mm-mm. That should not. No.
That's not. Yeah, it's not what a Jedi. Knowledge and defense, never for attack.
Yep. Absolutely. And yeah, this movie is still after 40 plus years. 44 years. Holy crap. Mm-hmm. Oh boy. That's right. This movie is as old as me, folks. I still really enjoyed this.
It does what the best sequels do, which is to take the world, to take the characters, and broaden them, expand them, build on them, rather than tell the same story over again.
Yeah. Absolutely. And even though certain other movies in the 90s are like, oh, it ends on such a down ending. It's whatever. That's what makes it so good, because it has to leave you wanting to come back for more. And that's the whole point of the ending here with, you know, Luke getting his hand cut off and needing to be saved, and then they kind of, you know, run off to wherever they're running off to.
Tatooine.
Yeah. And all of that. I just love... I forgot how good the battle scene was between Luke and Vader. I mean, say what you will about Luke, you know, always putting his saber up first and all that, because it's unfortunately what children do sometimes. That lightsaber battle is still one of, if not the best ones.
Because, yeah, this is something that Red Letter Media pointed out, and I think is very... It has stakes. You have feelings behind the characters.
Yep.
As opposed to, like, you know, in the prequels, there's a lot of choreography and gymnastics, but how much do you care about these individual characters? Until, like, the third one. And then the third one,
yeah,
it kind of went over the top.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, you're invested in Luke, and, you know, you want him, even though I didn't like Luke, I wanted him to beat Vader. Like, you know, you care. And that's something that you know, all the choreography in the world is not going to, like, replace.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Empire Strikes Back, folks. Did the film keep your interest throughout?
Yes. I mean, for the most part, like, again, I've seen it so many times. I mean, I saw it just a couple of years ago in concert.
What was that like?
That was cool. You know, like, it was fun. I didn't see Star Wars in concert. I missed that one. And I think I'm pretty sure I saw Jedi in concert.
Okay.
It's been a rough couple of years, but I know I saw Empire in concert.
Right.
And it was, you know, obviously it's got one of the best soundtracks.
Yes.
So that was cool to hear a live orchestra, the St. Louis Symphony, playing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you know, it is the best movie. It did keep my interest. I will say, after Star Wars, I sort of forced myself to, like, because I there were a couple times I wanted to play on the phone. Mm-hmm. I kind of had the phone away from me. Because I really wanted to, like, pay more attention and be a little bit better about it. But it is, you know, the flip side of loving this film so much is that I do know it backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
And you do get, like, I wanted to watch it kind of fresh, you know, for this.
Mm-hmm.
So and it was also, I don't remember if I watched, like Jason makes, my friend Jason makes fun of me because, like, a lot of my DVDs aren't even unwrapped. Like, I buy them because they're movies I've seen.
Yeah.
I rarely buy a movie on DVD that I haven't seen.
Right.
So it's like, I've seen it, like, and I have got so many copies of the original trilogy. I've got them on VHS. I've got, like, two different copies on VHS. I've got three or four copies on DVD, you know, so it's like, you know, I know the movie. I was curious about this one, whether this was the original special edition or the 2004 one, and it was a 2004 one.
Yeah.
I think I only have the original special edition on VHS. I'm not sure. But yeah, like, I it did keep my interest. I was, particularly as the movie went on, I got more and more. And once you got past kind of, okay, he's riding the Tauntaun, okay, Hano, buddy, blah, blah, blah. Okay, yeah, you know, like once you got into it, I got into it.
Yeah. And we kind of get, previous to this now, because story order, folks, we kind of sort of get the, obviously in Solo, we get the beginning. Like, I would have loved if they did a Solo Lando spinoff back then in the 80s. Just hearing those lines from the two of them watching it this time was just so cool. Just absolutely love that.
I love, like, I don't trust him either. He is my friend. This is such a Han Solo line.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't trust him, but he's still my friend.
No, I didn't take it that way. I took it that he didn't trust him because he was his friend.
Yeah, exactly. The funny thing is you said you wanted to pay. I was paying attention. What I was paying attention for is to see those things that they may have added. And the one thing, and you can chastise me all you want. The first time, and maybe it's because it's a special edition and it isn't the original version of the film, is seeing Bossk and the bounty hunters, was that special or was that in the original film? because we see your guy.
You're kidding, right?
I don't remember.
You know that they had action figures of all those guys, right?
Yes, I know, but
why would they have action figures of characters who never appeared in the movie?
Hey, they've made new action figures from special edition things before. But again, it wasn't
back in time to 1980?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, okay.
It was not a scene I remembered as much. Just like the oil bath from Star Wars, I did not remember the oil bath. I remember Vader, because what I don't remember is one of the other officers saying, we don't need those stupid bounty hunters.
Or yeah, we don't need their scum. And then Boss goes,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, my boy is the only bounty, the only other bounty hunter who has dialogue.
Yep, besides Fett, yeah. But I don't remember that scene at all.
Bro, it's doubly memorable because Star Wars has the cantina.
Yep.
With dozens of aliens.
Yep.
Jedi has Jabba's palace with maybe 100 aliens.
Yep.
Empire only has that one scene with the bounty hunters.
Yeah. And I don't remember it. I remember it now that I've seen it.
Bro,
I know it now that I've seen it, but I really do. Dude, I have I'm not a good enough Star Wars fan.
Folks. No, but I mean, like, to me, that's one of the most memorable scenes in the entire movie.
But again, I haven't seen this. How often do you watch Empire?
It was probably a couple years back when I saw it in concert. But like,
okay, so
yeah, I don't watch it like every week. But like,
okay,
I mean, maybe because Bossk, like, because I was a dinosaur nut, and Bossk is kind of a reptilian, you know. Dinosaurish character, you know, right. like Boss was my favorite when I was a little kid. But I remember I remember Forlom and Zuckuss, and of course, famously, the figures had the names flipped,
right.
So that Zuckuss was Forlom and Forlom was Zuckuss. You know, I mean, I remember Dengar and IG-88. Like, I just, those were the, you know, they had the stupid Darth Vader Star Destroyer playset because they couldn't call it an Executor, which was so that you could display all your bounty hunter figures.
Yep. Absolutely. All right, so the film kept our interest and all that. Are we itching to watch the next film now? Kind of.
I'm not itching to watch. Again, I've seen these movies so many times. I'm not itching to watch it, but yeah, I'm not like, we'll get to that part pretty fast. I think once we clear the Mandalorian, they'll go into a pretty deep, but yeah, I'm happy to watch Return of the Jedi. You know,
absolutely.
Even the stupid special edition with Jedi rocks.
Okay,
Joe stupid Yoda.
We will.
Yeah, new day. No, yeah, new day. It's like, oh. I don't like that character, but I don't hate Jedi rocks. To be honest, I like the expanded band. I don't remember what the hell they did to that film.
We will find out in episode 83. We will find out in a couple of weeks, folks. Would you recommend Empire to people?
If they've seen Star Wars, yes. Obviously. Okay.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. If you've seen Star Wars, you should watch Empire. Overall grade, 0 to 5 with half points. What are you going to give it?
I'm going to give it a 5.
I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Okay.
Only because I understand that Yoda was pretending to act like Luke, but oh my god, like I said, the cranky ass old Jedi, I'm like, oh god, hurry up. Like, once he starts training him, once he starts teaching him, like, once Luke starts trying to lift the ship, that's fine. But the whole, yeah, half point off just for that one little bit. But overall, watching this again, I absolutely love this film. I don't know if it's my favorite of the original three, but it.
So is because you gave Star Wars a 5, didn't you?
Did I? I don't remember. Go back to episode.
I don't remember, but like,
I thought
Star
Wars
your favorite?
No.
Or what, do we have to wait for the Return of the Jedi review for you to, like, give your opinion?
No, I will say, without having watched whatever the special edition version is, as a kid, I will say Jedi was always my favorite. Oh, well,
okay, yeah, that's fair. When I was a kid, Jedi was my favorite, too. No, but it's a difference between being a kid and being an adult.
And as an adult, like I said, the last time I have seen any of these films was 2010 when we originally did the original coverage over on Movie Week in Review. I think I said back then, Jedi was my favorite as an adult too, only because we find, even though he still does wrong things, and we'll discuss this next time we do this thing.
Well, but it looks much better in Jedi.
Exactly.
He's a Jedi.
Because he's a Jedi, and he's less, he's so annoying in Star Wars. He's a little bit less annoying in this because he's finally getting.
He's a total dipshit in this one. Like,
okay, well.
Hey, the 900-year-old Jedi Master's telling you something. Nah, don't pay attention to him. What does he know? You ask the impossible.
Hey, he's only. Wait a minute. Doesn't he say he's 700 in this?
He says for 800 years.
Okay.
He says top Jedi's for 800 years, but he's 900. But you know.
Okay. All right.
Remember, freaking Grogu is 50.
Is he really?
Yeah, they established that right. That's why the Grogu reveal is kind of a big reveal, because Werner Herzog says the target is 50 years old. And then I think IG-11 says some species age at a different rate.
That's right. So you're giving this a 5. I'm giving it a 4.5. We're going to go to a quick ad break, and we will come back to close the show right after this.
Kid.
Yes.
Shut up.
Beyond the Night is the GCRN's latest review podcast. We are covering everything in the Knight Rider television universe. From the classic 80s TV series to the 1991 reunion film, Team Knight Rider, and the 2008 relaunch series as well. So join TFG and Mike and Dion the Music Man as they go in-depth in Beyond the Night, only on Geekcast Radio Network. You can find Beyond the Night in iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com.
Get.
Yes, Michael.
Just keep driving.
Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. Slide up to the bar alongside Ryan Daly and a rotating cast of guest hosts as they celebrate the long-running, award-winning television series, one hilarious episode at a time. New episodes of Cheerscast drop every Thursday, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Hey, Jared, I have this idea for a new show for the network.
What is it?
You know how I liked the 1990s comic book series, The New Warriors?
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
And you know how at the Long Boss Crusade we're trying to get the YouTube channel going?
Also correct.
Well, thanks. So, how about you and me do a live stream show about The New Warriors? You've never read the books before, and I have them, and so that's a great setup. We could give it a catchy name, like Come Out to Play. Don't you think that's the greatest idea?
Sure, Delvin, that's a great idea. Just one question.
Yeah?
Why do you have me dangling off this ledge, holding me by only one arm?
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll get it soon, I hope. Come Out to Play, a New Warriors podcast, comes to you live on YouTube every second Tuesday of the month at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Long Box Crusade channel. If you can't watch it there, we replay them on the Long Box Crusade Network podcast feed, available anywhere podcasts can be found. We invite you to come along for the ride, or in other words, New Warriors. Come out to play, yay!
Yo, Joe, and welcome to the Cracktastic Plastic Podcast, where a punk rock band of brothers get together to talk about one of our shared loves, toy collecting.
Toy hunt by day, punk rock band by night. We'll take any excuse to get in the van.
We all collect different toy lines like those real American heroes.
G.I. Joe!
To the toys that are more than meets the eye, Transformers!
To He-Man!
And the Masters of the Universe!
From vintage to modern and all topics in between, you can always expect some rowdy and passionate discussion because we love talking toys here on the Cracktastic Plastic Podcast.
Like science fiction? Of course you do, or you wouldn't be listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. Well, the Marku 42's Universe Podcast is an award-winning sci-fi radio show that's been around for over 10 years. We cover everything from Doctor Who to the MCU to pop culture and everything in between. A new show drops on Tuesday mornings on the GCRN website and all of the major podcast platforms. So listen to the Marku 42's Universe Podcast from the universe and beyond.
Imagine a podcast that celebrates the things we love. Why spend time being so angry and cynical about our fandoms? Join me, the Irredeemable Shag, for a show where we're just trying to be happy. The Once Upon a Geek Podcast. Our discussions focus on a variety of geeky subjects that we're passionate about. While the topics will be ever-changing, our focus will be on science fiction, comic books, what it means to be a geek in this world, and other nostalgia-fueled ideas. Life is short. Focus on the positive. Find your joy. The Once Upon a Geek Podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
What was that universal greeting again? Never mind, I remember.
Ba weep grana, weep mini bong.
Hey guys, it's Rodimus Primal, and be sure to check out my YouTube channel. Join me as I have Transformers discussions, retrospectives, toy reviews, and more. You can also follow me on Twitter at Rodimus Primal, as well as Facebook and Instagram at Rodimus Primal Show. Transform and roll out, and be sure to check out my content till all are one.
Last big party of the summer, folks. Let's go out with a bang.
Hi, welcome to Up Nerd. What is Up Nerd? Up Nerd is a podcasting network of shows hosted by me, The Uneven Flow. People have told me I like to talk at them about a pretty wide range of topics, comics, games, movies, books, whatever, and now I'll be able to talk at you. Along with the weekly show will be two bi-weekly shows. First we have Fine You Pick, a show where one host picks a movie, then both hosts have to watch it. Then the next episode, the other host picks the movie. Each show will have a breakdown of why it is that movie was picked by that host, after which will be a discussion about what it is we just watched. Lastly, we have the show Top 3, Bottom 3. Similarly to Fine You Pick, one host picks a television series, and the next week, the pick alternates to the other host. Here, the episodes of the show are chosen by the top 3 episodes and the bottom 3 episodes, as rated on IMDb.com. Yes, this is probably the worst way to watch and review a television show, and yes, that's the idea. On our shows, I'll detail out how you can suggest things for us to watch, you can reach out and talk with the hosts, and maybe even appear on an episode. I hope you'll join me for this exciting new podcast adventure. I swear, we're going to make it more than 8 episodes.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
All right, I'll give it a try.
No! Why not? Do! Or do not. There is no try.
All right, folks, we are back here inside Studio 2009. Any final thoughts from you, sir?
Well, one little thing I wanted to point out was, did you notice how the last shot of the film with Luke and Leia and 3PO and R2 mirrors the last shot of Attack of the Clones?
Yes.
With Padme and Anakin. Yeah, that's the classic Lucas. It's like poetry. It rhymes.
Yep. Poetry in motion. And yeah, so final thoughts on Empire. Watching this movie, folks, and I have some Star Wars pops. I don't have all the Funko Star Wars stuff because there's just too much of it, but I have some of them. I actually have two different versions of Vader with the fist, with the you don't know the power of the dark side, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I've got the regular version of that, and then they did an artist series version where they turned him white like he's on Hoth. So
well, there's also like in the comics, there's mm-hmm. a what if story arc where Vader turns good, ends up in white armor.
Nice, very cool. I've got that, and I've got several other things. But you know, watching this movie, there's a whole set, the battle at Echo Base. It's the probe droid Leia at the computer. There's a whole set that connects to each other. I'm like, I want that. I want this. Watching this movie just makes me want to buy more crap.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole, in my collection, there's a whole stretch of shelf that's probably 2.5 feet long. That's like at the AT-AT. It's got Ewoker that's stomping on Snowspeeder with Dak in it. It's got, you know, the tower, the gun tower.
Yeah.
But it's, I've got the whole Echo Base battle set up.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, they also did, Funko also did Jabba's skiff, so I'm probably going to have to look into that one too for next time.
Yeah, I don't have that one set up as nicely because it's kind of high up, but I do have the Hasbro Pulse.
Oh, nice.
Cool. Oh, yeah, I backed that like the minute it went up.
I'm sure you did.
I'm glad I did because like the minute it came out, it doubled in price. So I was like, ooh.
Oh, yeah. That's.
Oh, no.
That's the way things happen.
Yeah, I know. I figured it out.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but that's the way things happen, unfortunately. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us. Thank you for joining us here inside the studio. If you'd like to get in contact with us, leave feedback for the show. There are several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. You can send an email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. You can check us out on any of the podcatching clients you choose to use. I prefer Spotify, but that's just me. You can follow us on Twitter @GeekCastRadio and @ITSStudio2009. I am @TFGOandMike. Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. You can also check out Studio 2009 over there, as well as joining the Toy World Order fan group. Toy World Order fan group. I can't talk anymore. Next time, I have no idea. It's episode 81. I've got several ideas, but I don't have any idea. I've got two ideas. It's either going to be another video game origins episode, or it's going to be a music episode where we talk about the Superman 2 score.
Ooh.
So, and when I say we, I don't know who I'm getting for that.
No,
yet,
that's you know, I mean, I know the original Superman score, the 79 score, but yeah. I really don't know. Did Williams do Superman 2?
Oh, you would have to ask me that, wouldn't you? I think he did.
Well, like, it's just, I'm interested. Like, it's like, I've never really thought about
this. I'm gonna edit this part out. I'll be right back.
Ooh. Technical difficulties. Let's move on, shall we?
Ken Thorne.
Yes, music composed and conducted by Ken Thorne from original material composed by John Williams.
Yeah.
I have the Superman 2 and 3.
Oh, God.
Deluxe edition from La La Land Records. I've had these discs for years. I don't know how many years, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Superman 3 is only one disc, but Superman 2 is two discs, so it's a three disc set. So yeah, I don't know what's going on with that, folks, but I do know in September. For episode 97, which is why the Jurassic Park feedback was in this episode of the podcast, episode 97 this September, Dave and I will be combining two films and doing a double feature.
Raiders of the Lost World.
Yeah, exactly. Raiders of the Lost World. We're going to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark and the Lost World Jurassic Park, or Jurassic Park the Lost World, whatever way.
The Lost World.
Yeah. Whichever way it goes. So that's coming up in September. We've got a whole other bunch of episodes that I'm not going to go through now, but Yeah, for now, I am TFG and Mike with
David Draper.
All right, we will catch you next time, folks. You'll hear us back in the studio soon.
Impressive. Most impressive.